Senate Jobs and Economic Growth Committee. We'll start on time, even though we have a few members floating back and forth. So, Senator Kreif, until we have a quorum, I don't know if you might not even have an amendment, but until we have a quorum, we won't be able to act. But let's at least start with the testimony. And so we're looking at member Senate File 1983. Senator Kreif.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Yeah. Senate File 1983 speaks to a construction code fund transfer. It basically eliminates the annual transfer of $1.515 million from the construction code fund to the general fund that was put in place in 2007. And establishes a June 30th, 2013 as the end date for the annual transfer to occur. In a nutshell, Mr. Chair, what this is money that is coming into this code from fees and permit fees, and it's been borrowed from to help balance the state budget. And quite frankly, it's left the code short, or this fund short, in some cases, and I actually have some testifiers here that can talk about it in greater detail.
Great. Should we turn to Ms. Perry then?
Of course.
Welcome to committee. Please give your name for the record.
Members, my name is Pam Perry. I'm the Executive Vice President of the Builders Association of Minnesota. I represent the residential construction industry. I really appreciate Senator Kreif bringing this bill forward, because not only has it left the fund short, it has left contractors very grumpy about paying fees for one objective, which is licensing and enforcement, and then being having it used for another purpose. Our request to you respectfully would be that if you are going to transfer money out of these funds for the general fund, perhaps they're not needed, and perhaps you should reduce our fees. So I would like to have a debate about a reduction of fees as opposed to transfers. This is the second transfer the residential construction industry is concerned about. Senator Daley brought forward a bill on the same issue. And, you know, perhaps at one time these funds were large because the construction industry was really an engine for the state and national economy, but it is not the case today. So I really urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Perry. Mr. Straczynski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, I'm Bill Straczynski, and I'm representing the Minnesota Electrical Association today. When the transfer, these are, again, permit fees from our perspective that you pay as homeowners or businesses for electrical inspections. It goes into this particular code fund. And what happened, in order to solve the budget problems of the last several years, we've taken money out of that fund and put it into the general fund, therefore creating problems in that fund itself. So the last, and it's become a more significant and serious problem. This is a management problem state government has, and certainly the Department of Labor and Industry, who's doing their very best to deal with this situation. But there's not enough money in the fund to properly pay inspectors and to do enforcement and what have you. We know that's going on right now. Over the past year, we've certainly looked at a variety of ways to try and replenish that fund with other types of things, gimmicks, I call them. It's a Band-Aid approach to try and fix this problem. I know that there's discussion now to cut electrical inspectors' rates, for example, another 5% cut in their current rates, because the fund actually needs money. So we're trying to come up with a variety of ways to fix the problem. In a nutshell, what you have before you today, though, is something a little different. We understand the legislature's ability and can continue to have that ability. We're not threatening that at all, to take money as you may need it to balance the state's budget. We're going to face deficits in the future. However, this particular bill, actually repeals the statutory requirement that you take $1.5 million. You put that in statute a few years back. $1.5 million automatically would be transferred out of that fund every year. From some of our perspectives, actually to us, it's one thing if you take money out and you don't have that statutory language, but when you put it in statute, it almost, frankly, looks like it's a tax, because you're actually taking fees, permit fees paid by the public, and actually using them for another purpose. That's because you're doing so by statute. And so we think that's an issue as well. And I know... Mr. Chairman, in the interest of brevity, I'll just tell you that the Minnesota Electrical Association, the National Electrical Contractors Association, ABC, Contract Electrical Inspectors Association, CARSA, which is low voltage people, Minestra, which is also low voltage people, and the IBEW, and certainly BAM, everybody in the industry supports this piece of legislation. And it doesn't affect this current budget. It's going forward. And frankly, your fail-safe and backup position, if somehow a massive crisis occurs in the future, you can always still have access to that fund and take money as you will, but not by statute. We think that's going way too far, and the fund actually needs the money. We'll get by this biennium somehow, but next biennium, it's problematic for us. And end of my testimony. Thank you so much. We thank the senator, too, for bringing this bill forward. It's a very important issue.
Thank you, Mr. Straczynski. Mr. Straczynski, did I hear you right? Are you forecasting another budget deficit?
Chairman, after 40 years being around here, I've seen things go up and down.
All right.
So I don't know.
So am I.
Concerned about it.
I've got Mr. Rakowski. I've got your name on the list here. I think that's why all the TV cameras are here. So why don't you come up to the table. Tell us where the department is on this legislation. Tighten your tie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm John Rakowski with the Department of Labor and Industry. And this issue has been a vexing one for the department for the last 5 years. I'm just here to offer some historical background, since many of you members are new to the committee and new to this budget. In 2007, if I can take about 2 minutes to explain to the committee how this transfer came about and why it's in statute. In 2007, as part of Governor Pawlenty's Drive to Excellence recommendations, the consolidation of all building inspection and permitting in the state of Minnesota was put under one roof at the Department of Labor. Previous to 2007, the functions of the plumbing code were housed at the Department of Health. Residential contractors' activity and licensing was handled at the Department of Commerce. And the building code administration was at the Department of Administration, and the Board of Electricity was a freestanding board. All four of those functions were put together with the boiler and high-pressure piping functions, which had been part of labor and industry almost going back to the times boilers and high-pressure piping were invented. Boiler and high-pressure piping, for all those years, produced more revenue than was needed to perform the functions under their statute. So what the legislature did is, I almost called you Senator Jensen. Dave Jensen can help me out here, but because they generated more revenue than they needed to operate, the money went to the general fund and then returned back to the department as what I believe is called an indirect appropriation. When we consolidated all these functions at the Department of Labor in 2007, to settle out with the general fund cost about $1.8 million. We were creating the Construction Code Fund at that time under the statute 325B. And Senator Dave Jensen remembers that at the time when the targets came before the Jobs Committee, you folks should know that many times your target is zero. So the department agreed to a one-time transfer of the $1.8 million to the general fund. We agreed to basically eat that $1.5 million in the Construction Code Fund that year. However, when the bill came out, it was put into statute, and every year thereafter, $1.5 million should be taken out. The agency has petitioned the administration ever since then to try to eliminate it, but as you know, we've had deficits all of about one of the last 5 years. And so as far as the department's concerned, we're in the middle of this biennium. We're not in a position to we've supported this elimination in the past, and certainly we would petition it again as a part of the budget-making process coming up this fall. So that's my history lesson for the day, sir.
Pretty good, Professor. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question on that history lesson. If I understand correctly, the reason that this transfer was initiated was because there was this establishment of the construction code. Is that correct?
A new fund, yep. That is correct.
Well, my question is, has it been established, and does there still need to be that ongoing funding for something that's already has the template or the groundwork done on it?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Nelson, it's hard for the members and the public, frankly, to, unless you're in the industry, to understand how this special revenue fund works, because last year when you came out with your budget bill, when you got to the division of the construction code and licensing, it simply lists $22 million. It doesn't explain anything in the budget bill even. It explains what the work comp functions are for the department and also the labor standards and apprenticeship. So basically it's a fee for service. We anticipate about $22 million every 2 years to come from this industry. They pay for their license, and in return they expect to get inspections. That's basically how it works. So one other thing I wanted to add, 2 years ago, and there were some members here, Senator Tomasoni was the chair, the electrical contractors weren't getting their inspections done in a timely fashion, and we were right in the middle of the big recession. And so the industry came forward to increase a building permit surcharge from 50 cents. It hadn't been changed since 1972, since the inception of the building code. And they asked to have it increased to a flat fee of $5. And that generates about $1.3 million a year, which covers essentially the cost of the $1.5 million transfer. And for the members, that sunsets next June 30th at the end of the biennium.
Thank you, Mr. Rakowski.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else here that would like to testify on Senate File 1983? Senator Kreif, any concluding comments? Otherwise, we're going to move this to the Finance Committee then.
Okay. Mr. Chair and Committee, I guess I would ask that we do pass this bill and move it forward. I think setting this in statute is something that that I don't think was the correct way for a legislature to handle this. If in the event of a shortfall they take money on a one-time basis, that I understand, but setting it in statute on an ongoing basis I just don't think is correct. I would agree with Mr. Strakowski that it feels too much like a tax, and I don't think we should be taxing people in this type of a way. So I would move that we take Senate File 1983 and move it to Finance.
All right, so we'll take up that motion and appreciate your work, Senator Kreif and Mr. Strakowski and Mr. Rajinsky. I think we got it all now. On the DeKreif motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion is passed. Thank you, Senator Kreif and members.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Let's go to Senate File 2386, Senator Nelson.
Nelsinski.
That's you.
Oh, it's Metzenbaum.
You've had a long career.
Yeah. Ohio. I started out in Ohio.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for allowing me to present Senate File 2386 to you today. Before I do that, I have an oral amendment that I would like to offer to get the bill in the shape it needs to be in.
All right, Senator Nelson, so if you can give us your oral amendment. And
line 0.14.
Members, again, we're looking at Senate File 2386. Senator Nelson, you're kind of moving in and out there. Keep close to that microphone
right,
so we can hear you.
After the period at the end of the word outcomes, please insert the following language. Olmsted County Social Services or its designee must assist.
Let me ask Senate Counsel then to identify and repeat that for members. Make sure we have what Senator Nelson's suggesting.
Mr. Chair, members, the amendment that Senator Nelson is offering would be on page 3, line 14, after the period and before an individual, insert Olmsted County Social Services or its designee must assist, and then it would read, so it's must assist an individual participating in. And then I think also on line 3.15, Senator Nelson wanted to delete must and insert to. So on, again, it would read as follows. On line 3.14, before an individual, insert Olmsted County Social Services or its designee must assist an individual participating in the program under this section to develop an employment support plan, and then continues on.
Members, do we have that, or do you want to Senate Council repeat that? I think we're set. So Senator Nelson offers that as an author's oral amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Motion's adopted. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. You'll notice that there are some handouts that I've provided to you. This bill is a bill that is intended to help those with high-functioning autism related disorders function independently and have employment in our society. Sometimes the transition from the structure of the home and the high school for an individual with autism, it's a dramatic life change. They're entering a world that does not necessarily learn or operate the way they do. And the supports that they've received prior in academic or therapeutic settings do not exist in the greater community. And the failure rates with employment are high for this population. So the legislation in front of you is to help create and test. It's a pilot program, a working template to be used throughout the state with this ever-increasing population. And if you'll notice the chart, it's rather dramatic. If you look at the bar chart that I've included in the packet today, you will notice a couple things. One, Minnesota is number one in the nation for cases of autism per capita. And the rise in autism started in about the 1900s, which means that the majority of our autism population now are age 22 or older. They're just leaving the structured setting of the schools with IEPs that have provided the structure they need. And they're just now entering into the workforce. It's important, then, that we continue somewhat in the same manner, having similar as the IEPs provided structure in school, that we have these social supports to help with the high-functioning autism young people who are entering the workforce. Some of you might recall my intern that I had last year, Simon, was a high-functioning autism young man, and he came with a He came and worked in my Capitol office here, did a fantastic job, but he had some structural supports that allowed him to do that. And that's what this pilot project does. It requests $60,000 for a pilot project, $60,000 from the general fund in fiscal year 2013. To the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development for a grant to Olmsted County to provide the employment supports and independent living services to county residents diagnosed with high-functioning autism. And if you'd like, I'd be glad to give you what some of those supports are. But I just want to make sure you understood the purpose of the bill. It's to help those with high-functioning autism succeed in employment as they're leaving the structured environment of schools and to become self-sufficient and independent workers in our society.
Senator Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Nelson, looking at this this bar graph chart here, is there an explanation for this rapid growth that happens, starting in the early 90s? And then, is it because of better identification, or is it movement of population, or...
Yes.
Answers.
Mr. Chair, Senator Howe, actually that's the very question I asked when I looked at this graph as well. There is one thing you will notice. There are two marks on the graph. In December of 87, the DSM-3 was used, and starting in 94, DSM-4 was was the use, was the manual that was used to diagnose individual type of illnesses or medical conditions. And so there certainly was a difference in what manual was being used. So I think that is part of it. But also, I found it very interesting, if you look at the actual map and you look at the incidence, you'll notice that the three states that have the highest incidence per capita are all northern states. Now, I don't know if there's any significance in that, but I did notice that. And I know that probably in your communities as well, you're aware of the growth in the autism population. And what's really wonderful about this population is with the adequate supports, these folks are wonderful employees. They just need that structure that they've had to succeed in the school setting to help them advance into the employment area as well.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Torres Ray and then Senator Kreif. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Nelson, thank you so much for bringing this to our attention. I was tracking these statistics very closely in my first term when I was in the Health and Human Services Committee, and for 2 years I just have not really tracked the statistics as closely as I used to, but I know, you know, that the increase is dramatic, so we certainly need to do something about it. And I think that your statement about the age of the kids, of the young people who are facing these tremendous challenges, is absolutely true, you know, 22, 25 years. I'm curious about the Olmsted County selection for the pilot. Could you tell us a little bit about kind of the statistics or why do you think the pilot should start there?
Mr. Chair, Senator Torres Ray, Olmsted County was selected because it has a very active group of parents and medical community folks and county support services and education services as well. I attended, there were four meetings for high-functioning autism citizens in our community. So there's a particular group that is already formed around this particular area. And again, there's a lot of the necessary support structures, kind of like what we would call the natural resources, in place. So it would be an ideal spot for this pilot program. I don't think we're in a position yet where we can say it should go statewide. I do believe we need to start with a pilot program, and we need to start in a spot like Olmsted County that already has the natural resources and the supports in place to see if these type of supports can be very helpful.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Nelson, I very much hope that in this process we are kind of able to look at how do we implement a model that we can replicate, because this is so needed, you know, in different counties. And so I hope that as you continue the conversations, we talk about, you know, how we can bring these back in terms of replicating and figuring out how do we expand this, because I think this is really needed.
Senator Kreif.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Nelson, I have a couple of questions, actually. One is this DSM-3 and DSM-4 testing. Is that on a nationwide basis? Is that just Minnesota?
Well, I'm really speaking out of my field here. It's Diagnostic Service Manual. It's what the clinicians use in diagnosing particular conditions, and my understanding is it's a national. In fact, I'm just sure it is.
Okay.
Senator Craig.
My second question is on your map that looks like Wyoming, it would be a great place to live if you were worried about having a child with autism. Because it doesn't look like there's anything there. Is that just because they don't report?
Senator Nelson.
Mr. Chair, Senator DeKreif, I'm afraid I can't give you the specifics of how these particular numbers showed up. This is what has been reported. I can't tell you what's happening in all 50 states, but I can give you the information about Minnesota. And if I could add one thing, Mr. Chair,
Senator Nelson.
To Senator Torres-Ray's comment. The purpose of this is to have a pilot that we can track and see if it's effective, that it could serve as a template for a rollout statewide. That is the purpose.
Very good. So, Senator Nelson, do you have anyone that you wish to have testify on this bill, or is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on Senate File 2386? Any concluding remarks, Senator Nelson?
I thank you, members, for the time to present this. It's a growing concern. It certainly needs to come before the Jobs Committee. It is important that we take these help folks with high-functioning autism actually transition into the world of employment and self-sufficiency. I think this pilot program can help us lay the plans for that, something that we may need to look at on a statewide basis, and I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. So Senator Nelson moves that Senate File 2386, as amended, be recommended to pass and refer to the Finance Committee. On the Nelson motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion is adopted.
Thank you, Mr.
Senator
Chair,
Nelson.
And committee.
Next, members, we have Senator Cruz, who I think is in the room. Senator Cruz, welcome back. And so, members, we had a little bit of discussion on this bill or a smaller version of this bill last week, if you'll recall, in one of our extra committee sessions. Senator Cruz knew, and I know he has continued to work on this bill, pieces of it being having more issues than others. And so we have it before us today purely as an informational hearing. We'll get an update on where things are and how things are going to proceed, but it is not our intent to take any action on this bill today. We have folks signed up on both sides of the bill, if it's fair to say there's at least two sides. And so we'll start with Senator Cruz, Senate File 2443. And if I can just ask those in the audience, if you haven't already indicated to committee staff that you wish to testify, if you could make sure you get your name and intent up there, that would be great. So, Senator Cruz, how would you like to proceed?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess to start off, I'd like to maybe go through just a quick rundown on what this particular piece of legislation does. But before that, give a little insight both into my personal connection with the hospitality industry and then also just kind of talk about the impact the hospitality industry has in Minnesota as far as our economic climate, our job creation climate, talk about some of those things. So,
perfect. Thank you, Senator Cruz. That's perfect.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, a lot of folks don't know this about me, but among the many hats I wear, I am a server. And I have worked in the restaurant industry for a very long time, right around 16 years. I spent a significant portion of that time managing restaurants. When I went to get my real estate license, I took a step back from managing to kind of go into just the serving side of the industry again to help supplement the income as you kind of start up your own business there. So I have a very very personal investment in this particular legislation. I work around the industry every week, and I work around servers every week. So it's my pleasure to be able to present this bill before you today. I think it's important to focus on some of the benefits that the hospitality industry and the restaurant industry bring to Minnesota. A lot of folks don't realize how significant a part of our economic climate restaurants and the hospitality industry is. Last year, in 2010, the hospitality industry had about $11.4 billion in annual sales. Essentially, the restaurant industry paid in right around $732 million in sales taxes, which represents about 17% of the overall sales tax in the state that's collected. So just absolutely a huge, huge piece of our sales tax here. The restaurant industry, the hospitality industry, employs right around 252,000 people. Essentially what that breaks down to is right around one in every 10 Minnesotans work in the hospitality industry. So a very significant number of our constituents. I think it's important to also focus on the fact that the hospitality in general is a very open job climate and the fact that folks use it for many different reasons. Folks use it as a primary source of income to support their families. But secondly, folks also use it as a transitional job, whether they be going to school, whether they be in between other jobs, professional careers, whether it be that they're using it to supplement their income. That's why such a significant portion of our constituency works in the hospitality industry. It's very flexible. The hours are flexible. The cash is great to have on hand. I would argue that it's one of the few jobs left where someone can go out while they're in that transitional period, or whether they're while they're trying to further their education or maybe do some other things, and still obtain a sufficient income to provide for their families. So I think we need to focus on that. Essentially, what this legislation will do, this legislation, Senate File 2443, would allow employers to apply gratuities when calculating the minimum wage. The minimum wage that must be paid to a tipped employee would be either at least $7.25 an hour, which is what it is right now, the current federal minimum wage, or an hourly wage at least equal to the applicable rate for the employer or the federal minimum wage if a tipped employee does not earn sufficient gratuities during the pay period, so that the sum would be either the $7.25 an hour per hour and gratuities received, that would have to be at least $12 an hour. So essentially what we're moving forward and saying is we are not here asking for anyone to take any type of a pay cut. I want to be very, very clear about that. This is a very looking forward. We want to be proactive with all of our restaurateurs, our restaurant staff, but we also understand that there needs to be a balance struck between costs that are incurred at the restaurant level, and that sometimes tipped employees, which is only what this would address, is tipped employees, we do handle them on a little bit different pay scale. So with that, I would be more than happy to answer any questions, allow for testimony, whatever it be the will of the chair.
Okay, I'll recognize Senator Kelash. Senator Kelash, just a sec. What I have now is I've got a nice balance going here. So we've got two more to hear from on the Cruz bill, on what may be called the pro side, and then two on the con. We can kind of intersperse committee conversation in between there.
It's a technical, okay. I think, question. And it has to do with where in the language of this bill does it limit it to just the hospitality or restaurant industry? Would this include taxi drivers, masseuses, massage therapists? Would it include, you name it, somebody else, maids, whoever else gets a tip? It seems like it's incredibly broad at this point. So can you clarify where it limits it to just the...
Mr. Chairman and Senator Kelash, if I made that impression, I apologize. This is for all tipped employees. So this is not just to the restaurant industry. This would be all tipped employees.
Senator Cruz, why don't we have then? Why don't Mr. McElroy, and then I also have Ms. Oland. Why don't you come to the table there with Senator Cruz, and we'll take some more testimony, and we'll go to. Assuming this is your preference, we'll look at Mr. McElroy first. Mr. McElroy, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Dan McElroy. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Restaurant Association. And here, I want to thank Senator Cruz for his authoring of this bill, and thank you for granting us an opportunity to explain it. As many of you know, the issue of how tipped employees are most fairly compensated has come before the legislature many times. This is a different approach. We are not asking authority to use the federally authorized tip credit, but rather establish a tier of the wage that would stay constant for tipped employees if they made $12 an hour or more. That's been suggested before. We had a bill to do this before, but I think we have it in a form that's fair and workable going forward. If I could just make four simple points, and then I'd like to turn it over to one of our members to tell you how it impacts her business and her family and her servers. First of all, I think it's important to note that gratuities are treated as wages, both for our servers and for business people, in almost every other aspect of law except wage and hour. Both employees and employers pay Social Security on the gratuities. They both pay Medicare tax on gratuities. The employer pays unemployment insurance tax on gratuities up to the maximum for any other kind of income. And if an employer elects to offer a 401k program and a match, tips count toward the amount that can be contributed in the 401k or that need to be matched. And so for every other purpose except minimum wage and workers' comp, tips are wages. Secondly, the industry has changed. The best paying jobs in our business have been servers who are good at it and work hard and get great tips. But for a variety of reasons, the business is changing. We just got national data from the National Restaurant Association that showed in 2011, about 31% of the restaurant industry volume was at table service restaurants. The balance was at fast food and fast casual, pizza delivery, coffee shops, buffets, cafeterias, and concession stands. That number is down from about 50% at table service restaurants 7 years ago. That, and we are concerned that if financial pressures continue to make service disproportionately expensive, particularly in Minnesota, that will continue. And I believe we also provided a handout showing the trend toward what the industry calls tableside automation, which is something as simple as an Android or an iPad on a table that allows the guest to order their own meal, to order a second drink, to pay for their meal, to verify their age. Buffalo Wild Wings has rolled out 40 locations with that technology. Chili's has a little less robust test going on. The article that you have mentions a concept in California called Stacks. Some level of automation will likely come regardless of the pressure on server wages, but we believe that that we increase the pressure and likely decrease the number of really good paying jobs if without something like this Main Street restaurant wage.
Mr. McElroy, sorry for the interruption. I just want to make sure I have these numbers right. So you're quoting an National Restaurant Association.
I'm careful not to use that acronym, Mr. Chair.
I am too. One-third, so was it dollars or was it consumers?
No, it's an estimate based on a study done by the National Restaurant Association, and it's in dollar volume.
Okay.
And it was 31 point, and my taking this from memory, I believe it's 31.5% at table service. The balance from fast food, fast casual, pizza delivery, coffee shops, buffets, cafeterias, and concession stands.
And that was down from over 50%.
From about 50% 7 years ago.
Okay. Thank you for...
All right. This bill was crafted carefully so that it is as fair as possible to those who work in seasonal restaurants around the state. We have members where all of their employees will make $12 an hour in the summer and if there's a snowmobile season, and are less likely to make that in spring and fall or in a winter without shoulder season. And rather than have it be an average or monthly, we did it on a pay period by pay period basis, so it's absolutely as fair to servers as humanly possible. I've also been asked if this would be difficult to keep track of, and the answer is no. Employers are required to report tips to the IRS currently. All of the payroll services that we use tell us they can handle this kind of differential without any difficulty. There are differentials in other industries like shift differentials or high floor pay in some construction trades or a variety of others that the systems handle easily. We're convinced that we can explain this easily to our team members, that it can be administered uniformly, consistently, and fairly. I also want to make clear that, at least from our organization, this is not from our – should not be regarded as a camel's nose proposition. This provides a fair, level knowable wage going forward, and we would not be intending to come back asking for some further change in this provision of the law. So, Mr. Chair, with that, thank you. And I want to thank Wanda Olin from Rascals Bar and Grill in Apple Valley and ask her to provide some insight. And I assured her the committee would be kind and polite to her. She's a little nervous about being with us this morning.
Ms. Olin, I will assure you that we will be good and kind. And thank you for joining us this morning. And thanks for being in this industry, which is tough.
Yes, I have to admit it is a tough industry.
But just for the record, if you can give your name,
okay,
and then perhaps the name of your restaurant.
My name is Wanda Oland. I own Rascals in Apple Valley. Julie and I opened 17 years ago. So we have gone through massive changes in our world. And I can't say it's been easy, but we have survived. The one thing about this, I started as a dishwasher at 15. I celebrated 48 years in the business last week. I've done it all. Dishes, serve, cook, everything you can imagine. I opened 12 restaurants with Champs and thought I wanted to get back to what made the business special. So we opened our restaurant in Apple Valley. And many of my staff, my kitchen staff, I have two in the kitchen who have been with me less than 12 years. 12 to 16 years is the average. These guys work hard, and the staff itself, many, many of my people, 10, 15 years. So it's not a corporate situation. It's a family, and we support each other. Through the worst of the economy, when everything seemed so hopeless, the non-smoking, the .08, the $5 a gallon, the economy dumping, and my core clientele being the one that got hit the hardest, the young family and the seniors. And we sat down and looked at all the avenues, and one of which was to close the doors. And I'll tell you what, the staff stayed behind us, and we made it through and came out stronger. And I really apologize. But the thing that makes it hard for me with the minimum wage is every time it goes up, it's like getting another loan payment to my bottom line. But the thing I feel the worst about is the people in the back of the house, the people that make it happen, the people that keep us alive, are the people I can't reward. And the servers make a very good living wage, and if they didn't, I would be the first to hand them some money and add to their check to make sure they did. But the servers do have a lot of flexibility. A lot of my servers do support a family. A lot of my servers, they can't work because their kids are little. So their husbands watch the kids at night, and they come in and make the extra income. And so it's such a mix. They work their way through school, and they can work when they can. If they've got a study and they've got tests, they can take a week off. So it gives them the freedom to work hard to make their lives better. And I just think we have no control, and it's a really tight business anyway. We can't control what our food costs, and in our economy, we can't raise the prices. So food costs that should probably be running 37, it's running 40, and we eat it. So I'm certainly not whining, and I love my staff, but it's a hard avenue, and my customers are all independent business people. I'm not saying it's just us. It's everywhere. So to do something fair and make it a little easier so we can reward those that are loyal, that's basically where I'm coming from.
So, Ms. Oland, if I can you tell us a little bit about your restaurant?
Sure.
What do you What do you serve? And I'm dying to know why the name.
Okay. Well, the name in the beginning, now you're hitting my stuff. In the beginning, I wanted a place where I could have pictures of my friends on the wall. I didn't want caricatures because they would be embarrassing. I wanted cartoonish things. And Dewey looked at me and shook his head and he said, Wanda, you don't know anybody that hasn't got a little devil in them. They're all rascals. And that's how we started. And we had pictures of our friends on the wall. As the world changed, we had to change. You know, when we opened, sorry to say it, it was one big old saloon because that's what was popular. Now we're a family restaurant. We have a finer dining side. And my husband built every table in the restaurant, every piece of furniture, every wall. He's done it all, every floor, which really helped us be able to do it, I have to admit it. And then we have a bar side that caters to people that 30 and up, and they come in with their friends and the coaches and the senators and the representatives. These are my regular customers. The nicest thing anyone ever said to me is, this place has arms around it. You feel like you're getting hugged. And that made me feel really good. So, but as an independent, we have to be better than the corporates. We make everything from scratch. We smoke our own ribs, cut our own steaks, fillet our own fish, make our own sauces. Is that a commercial? And so we try harder.
Where's it at?
And the staff tries harder. And through the economy, the staff stayed with us. They did not leave. They believed in us and knew we could do it. And a lot of people in my industry would have bailed. They would have gone someplace else that was on a main corner, not two blocks off the main drive where nobody saw it. It's a destination. They would have moved, but instead they believed in us, and in return, we take care of them. So it's kind of been a win-win.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Miller. And then
thank you, Mr. Senator Chair. Members, sounds like a good field trip to me, Mr. Chair.
I thought we could recess for
maybe,
lunch.
Maybe we're close to the lunch hour. Maybe we could have our next committee hearing.
I guarantee you would be pleased.
Senator Thompsoni, are you going to drive, Senator Thompsoni?
No, I would, sure. But, Mr. Chairman, I didn't
we
hear
cater.
I don't.
I'll come down with the truck.
I'm not sure I heard the name of the restaurant. Is it Rascals?
Rascals.
It is, okay.
Yes.
Ms. Yes. Olin, I've got a picture of a legislator or two we could put on your wall.
Do you really? I have backed off a little on the pictures. It got a little, like, overbearing. And people kept saying, when do I go up? Yeah. And so we did back off when we remodeled on the pictures. But like I said, it's a place where, an example, one of my young people, when he was 6 weeks old, his parents brought him to meet me. I was their favorite bartender. And last year, he's 33, and his little girl was born, and 6 weeks to the day, they came down to meet me and have a picture. So this is how many years I've been in it. And, you know, it does get in your blood. It's very rewarding. Maybe not always monetarily, but it is a very rewarding thing. A lot of hard work. But it's worth it. It gives you a good life.
Well, thank you, Ms. Olin. We're going to take a little more testimony, but I know we wish you all great success.
Thank you. Your
establishment and the folks you work with. Senator Cruz, did you have a comment? I think I was moving to some others before, but I saw your hand up at one point.
Well, I just kind of wanted to piggyback off of what Wanda was saying. You know, these are small business owners. And right now, the restaurant industry is, as she mentioned, a very difficult industry to be in. When we go out to eat, that's kind of considered a luxury. In tough economic times, folks are more apt to go to the grocery store and cook food at home to save a little bit, and that translates directly into jobs. And I also wanted to mention that, you know, as someone who has worked in the industry for a very long time, I can tell you, the best pay increase that I would ever receive is an increase in menu prices. If you start looking at a tipped percentage, and that's how gratuity is usually calculated, that's where my wage increase comes from, is a menu increase. Now, a lot of our restaurants haven't been able to do those menu increases for a couple of different reasons. First and foremost, the cost of the products has gone up. And secondly, the overall economic climate. So I think this is a great step in helping us control those costs and making sure that we still provide those jobs. We have to do that, because if we continue to let these small businesses, these small restaurants close down, all of these folks who are industry employees will be out of work. And I know that we don't want that. So I think the best thing that we can do, you know, above and beyond passing this legislation here for our restaurant industry, is to continue moving forward to focus on the overall economic health of the state, the overall economic job climate in the state, make sure that our folks here in Minnesota have a couple of extra dollars so that they can go out to the restaurant and spend that. So, you know, I just kind of wanted to supplement what she said with that, and to also say that, you know, I have seen restaurants close, and that's why we're here today.
All right, thank you. Let me then ask Christine Jacobs and Mike Wilhelmi to come up to the table there, and we'll switch gears here. Before you guys go, because I don't want this to get away from the end of committee, members, we're going to pass out on a different topic, the omnibus tax bill, which was laid out this morning in tax committee. It has a number of jobs related provisions. I don't know if everyone has seen it, but we at least have a spreadsheet and a summary, and so I wanted all members to have that based on your interest in that kind of legislation. So we'll make sure that staff gets that out to you as we wrap up this bill. So I don't know who's raising their hand first. Mr. Wilhelmi, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and association for the record.
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you. My name is Michael Wilhelmi. I'm representing Unite Here, Local 17. Usually Mr. Wade Lunenberg would be giving this testimony today, but unfortunately he was unavailable. I hope you'll find me as a suitable fill-in. And I don't know in terms of a lobbying tactic, making the opposing testifiers hungry before we speak, but we'll see if we can get through this. First of all, Unite Here Local 17 represents approximately 5,000 people who work in bars and restaurants and hotels and also sports stadiums in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Bloomington, and other places throughout the Twin Cities. Folks, they work very hard for their wages and their tips as well. They earn them, and they would like to keep them. And that's primarily the reason why we're here today. We've seen this iteration of this bill called tip penalty, tip credit, or super wage, or whatever it might be. But the purpose of this legislation is the same, regardless of what it might be called. And essentially, it's to reduce the money that can be earned by servers. And that's not a good thing, we don't think. People come by their wages or their earnings, they should be allowed to keep them. For servers, wages or tips, it's the same thing. It's money in the pocket that's earned by the person for performing a service. And they use that money to pay their bills, to pay their mortgage or their car payment or their kid's orthodontia payment. And any effort by the state to make it possible to reduce their wages has an impact not only on them as individuals, but also on society. For business owners, it's a little bit different. These wages that are paid, it's one of many costs of doing business that a restaurant will have. And ultimately, we appreciate that they want to lower their operating costs, but this seems too high a price to pay for working people and for society, quite frankly. If the state should weigh in on this, essentially making it possible to reduce these wages, that doesn't seem like the type of thing that a state should do for its people. The suggestion here also has been, or at least has been made in the past, that if a law like this were enacted and servers could be paid less, then employers, restaurateurs, would voluntarily pay someone else more, folks in the back of the house or whatever. And that just doesn't seem to be logical that they would voluntarily do that. that lowering of one cost of business would mean that they would voluntarily increase another cost of doing business any more than, you know, if the price of other inputs that a restaurant would have, that those would go down, that they would be willing to pay people more. Mostly it's on the basis of the economics of a particular business. And the minimum wage is meant to provide kind of a basic standard of living for working people. We would suggest also this is anti-consumer. When people go to a restaurant, they see the prices of the food and beverages that they wish to consume. They make their order accordingly, and at the end, they settle up with the restaurant, and they leave extra money either on the table or else on their credit card or their tip on their receipt. And that money is intended to be for the service that they provided. And I don't think that people would appreciate or understand if this were to become law, that this essentially that they would be paying the house again, that they'd be paying the restaurant yet again for the meal that they just consumed. And finally, the final point I'd like to make is please keep in mind that most servers are women. So the impact of this legislation would primarily fall upon working women. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Christine Jacobs. I'm executive director of the Jobs Now Coalition. Jobs Now Coalition does labor market research and represents over 100 organizations statewide who believe that working for a living ought to mean something to especially to us here in Minnesota. I just want to first address the fact that this is an informational meeting. I've got a lot of information that I was not able to get off my computer this morning, so I apologize for that and want to let you all know that we will have data for you on how much Minnesota workers need every penny of their wages. I don't know if members know this, but the minimum wage, if it had kept pace with inflation, would now be $10.49 an hour. So what workers have lost and what has happened to median family income in Minnesota over the last 10 years is shocking. As far as employers wishing to raise the wages of all their food staff, but they can't because of tipped workers, all the surrounding states that have that pay their restaurant employees tipped wages pay less than the minimum wage, but yet all their staff earns less than people do in Minnesota. So, and I will have some data for you on that. The National Restaurant Association's 212 industry forecast maintains that in states that actually, or shows that in states that have a higher minimum wage for their tipped employees, job growth is faster and job growth is projected to be faster. And that's the Restaurant Association's 212 industry forecast. In Minnesota, the job gap is 5-1. For full-time job openings. Most of the job openings in Minnesota are part-time jobs. People absolutely need every penny. This legislation would be a cap on wages, a permanent cap on the minimum wage for Minnesota workers, and extremely detrimental to the bottom lines of our families in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jacobs and Mr. Wilhelmy. Members, Senator Cruz, first perhaps not in response, but to continue the discussion, and I have some members who are raising their hand too. Senator Cruz.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I just wanted to make two very, very quick points. The first and foremost, in no way does this legislation lower the ability of a server to make a wage. Right now, under this legislation, the minimum wage continues to be $7.25 an hour, just as it is right now, and that will continue moving forward. So I just want to be very, very clear that we're talking about what we're talking about here. This in no way reduces the minimum wage on our hospitality staff or our tipped industry. And then secondly, I also want to be very, very clear that in no way will this legislation, you know, it was kind of inferred that when folks would pay the gratuity that they would be paying the house. I just want to be perfectly clear that in no way does this legislation take any tipped gratuity and surrender that to any hospitality industry, restaurant, tipped employer. In no way does it do that. I just want to make sure that we're very clear about what we're talking about here.
To that point, Mr. Chair.
To that point also.
Well, you guys are making all kinds of points. Well, let me add one comment from this end of the table, too, then. Thank you, Senator Cruz. And, you know, it strikes me, and I'm glad we're having this conversation, at least starting this conversation in this committee, and to both Mr. Wilhelmi and Ms. Jacobs, I mean, it strikes me there's such a contrast between what you are saying and what we just heard from Ms. Oland. She's not trying to do anything negative to women, Mr. Wilhelmi, and that was part of your testimony. She's not trying to take away things from her employees, which she sounds like she treats as family. So it just strikes me that there's some conversations that are disconnected and missing each other, and whatever we can do to bring this conversation together instead of frankly some of the talking points that all sides use, I think would be useful here. Senator Kielash.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, let me see if I got your math right, because I think what you're saying is that this bill does not change the income of a server. So if a server currently is making $7.25 an hour, gets a $10 an hour's worth of tips, they make $17.25 an hour. Under this bill, that same $10 an hour tip on top of the minimum wage would be, I think it's $2.13 an hour, would only be $12.13 an hour. So how do you justify the difference? I mean, there's a difference there. Where's the that server is losing that money, and you're suggesting that they're not losing anything.
Senator Cruz, are you following that math?
You know, Mr. Chairman and Senator Kielash, I'm not quite following your math, because right now under this, if this legislation were to be enacted, the minimum wage does not change. The amount of tips that a server, right, or anyone in a tipped industry would be allowed to collect would continue to be the same moving forward.
Mr. Chair, let's work back if you don't mind. So let's just do the tips being exactly the same per hour, mm-hmm, and go back to what's the final income for that server. Under the current law, that income would be $17.25 an hour, and under this law, it would be significantly less, correct?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Kielash, no, that is, that I do not believe that to be correct.
Thomas Sony, I'll let you try it.
To that point.
Senator Thomas Sony, go to work on the calculator.
Okay, to that point, because I believe that you're probably thinking that's what this bill does, but there is an or in your bill, and the or says, or United States Code Title 29, Chapter 8, and that says that an employer of a tipped employee is only required to pay $2.13 an hour in direct wages if that amount plus the tips received equals at least the federal minimum wage. And so I think Senator Kielash is right that under your bill, that if the tips plus the minimum wage are more than $7.25 an hour, that you can pay $2.13 an hour minimum wage instead of $7.25 an hour. So I believe that's what your bill says.
Now,
I may be incorrect, but I think that's what it says.
I'm going to ask Mr. McElroy to join us, because in my experience, and I bet yours too, Senator Tomasoni, Mr. McElroy's calculator was always thought as pretty good and helpful. So, Senator Cruz or Mr. McElroy to the Tomasoni question.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, there is a provision in Minnesota law that prohibits Minnesota employers from applying what's referred to as the federal tip credit. And this bill does not repeal that. And so the federal minimum wage, absent the tip credit, is $7.25 an hour. And it stays at $7.25 an hour. And so under Senator Kielash's question, if an employee makes $7.25 in wages today and $10 in tips, their compensation would stay at $17.25. What the bill would do is if at some time in the future the minimum wage, either federal or state, and as you know, we pay the higher of the two, were to go to $8, then the if an employee had less than $12 an hour total in wages and tips, they would earn the new minimum wage of $8. If they had more than $12, they'd stay at the $7.25 level. However, as Senator Cruz indicated, our experience has been that gratuities go up as menu prices go up. But the we're not asking to apply the federal tip credit, Senator Thompson.
Okay, Mr. Chairman and Mr. McElroy, I appreciate Senator that. Thompson, but what is the reference then in the bill to or United States Code Title 29, Chapter 8?
Because that's where the federal minimum wage is located, and the federal minimum wage is somewhat complex, but the provision that allows for a tip credit won't apply in Minnesota because of state law.
And are you sure it's not applicable to $2.13 an hour and tipped employees?
Senator, yes, I am sure, but we will go back and look at the federal code. I can tell you that as we have drafted this, and we worked very honestly with House research, and so, to draft it, well, our belief is that we were very careful not to repeal the prohibition on the tip credit. So that's still Minnesota state law says that Minnesota employers cannot take the federal tip credit. And so I'm confident it keeps it at $7.25 an hour. Okay. But I'll be happy to double check it.
I appreciate that because there's a word or in there. And when you put the word or in, that means that number one might not be the one you use, and number two might not be the one you use. So there's an or in there, and it refers to this United States Code Title 29, Chapter 8, and that's the $2.13 tip credit. And so I want to make sure that what you're telling us is what the bill says, because there's a possibility that it might not.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, we will, I believe it is, but we will verify that, and if necessary, change it.
And one more follow-up, because...
Senator Thompson.
Because I read this thing here, and it's pretty clear what you're trying to do. Aren't you setting yourself up for a nightmare of bookkeeping? Every week you got to write a check and figure out whether or not a person has an $8 an hour average or a $5 an hour average or a $7.25. Because I always hear how onerous our laws are, and this just seems to me that if Senator Cruz has to figure out every single week whether or not he pays a person a certain amount or pays him a different amount, that, boy, I...
Mr. McElroy.
Senator, we certainly thought about that, and we have... we do not believe that. We have to report salary, wages, and tips today for the IRS and the Minnesota Department of Revenue and unemployment. And we have had discussions with our payroll services who handle differential wages like this for a variety of other industries, and it's pretty simple. The vast majority of my members use a payroll service, and we're very confident that it is easily administrable.
So let me ask then, Ms. Jacobs, do you have a different read of the math here, of the questions that have been going on the last few minutes? Is there something you can add to this discussion?
Well, Mr. Chair, we have the same concerns. It's been a little hard to figure out what the bill actually says. So yes, we would share the concern that that intention be made clear. I think there's some concern also at the Department of Labor and Industry about the definition of what a pay period is, because that varies from establishment to establishment as well. So I do think some clarity is appropriate.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Kielash.
Yeah, could counsel on line 2.10, it says gratuities not applied except as the provision in subdivision 1. Does that not mean that except where it says in paragraph D that suddenly that is the exception to the gratuities not applying, in fact saying that
gratuities do apply. I mean, it's just the opposite of what Mr. McElroy was saying, I think.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members and Senator Kielash, I'm assuming that Mr. McElroy was referring to the gratuities not applied section, and I do believe, Senator Kielash, that you're correct that this would say that except as now provided in this new paragraph D, that you couldn't apply gratuities.
So in paragraph D, it allows you to apply gratuities.
Yes,
right?
Mr.
So it's
Chairman.
Basically, it's a way of repealing with gratuity. I mean, subdivision 2 in this code.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, and Senator Kielash, I agree that that is what that does.
Mr. McElroy, would you care to respond to that?
I couldn't entirely hear all of that, and I'd be happy. It might be more productive for us to sit down with Senate counsel and make sure that the language accomplishes what we have been assured it does. I can assure you that the brochure that Senator Tomasoni referred to describes what we believe the language accomplishes. This section of statute gets a little complicated. Let me repeat that what we believe the language does, and we'll work with counsel to make sure it does, is to keep the minimum wage at the current level of $7.25 for servers who earn at least $12 with tips and gratuities. And we'll make the language work. We'll make it right.
And Senator,
Mr. Chair, members, I agree that that it would keep it at $7.25 per hour, and it's just saying that as provided in that paragraph, that it would be at $7.25 per hour, but that if the minimum wage goes up on the federal level, that there would be a differential between, you know, the $7.25 and what the new possible increased federal minimum wage would be. So it would allow a little differential between those, an increase and $7.25. So that's what it would allow going forward.
Oh, Mr. Chairman.
Just a sec, Senator Thompson. So Senator Kielash and Mr. McElroy and Senator Cruz, I understand that on the bill drafting side, you've worked predominantly with the other bodies, legislative staff, and so this is
we'll work with your counsel.
We've probably had a little less look at this language on this end of the table. Mm-hmm. Senator Tomasoni.
I'm just wondering if counsel knows what that or United States Code Title 29, Chapter 8 means in this legislation.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, and Senator Tomasoni, I guess that is referring to the entire chapter of the Federal Labor Standards Act, I guess. So the confusion probably is that within that chapter, it does talk about tipped employees and the $2.13 and the $30 a month. But that section also, that chapter also talks about the federal minimum wage. And so I don't know if perhaps there could be more of a clarification if the intent is not for it to be the $2.13, if it is to be kind of at the federal minimum wage, you know, as it gets increased. Right now it is at $7.25. I'm assuming that the intent is that as the federal minimum wage is increased, that this is what it is supposed to reflect.
Well, you know what they say about assuming. So I'm not sure why that particular reference needs to be in this bill, and maybe that's something you could look into. I don't know.
That it's there is to preserve our tradition that employees are paid the higher of the federal wage or the state wage. And if it wasn't there, and there got to be a time when the federal wage was higher, it may cause some confusion. We advise virtually all restaurants that their business is in interstate commerce because they may have guests from outside of Minnesota, they may have vendors from outside of Minnesota, they accept credit and debit cards. And so it's important that we make clear that the federal minimum wage likely applies to their payroll. But I agree with counsel there may be a better reference to the federal code that's more specific, and we'd be happy to do that. And that's a benefit of a hearing such as this one.
So, Senator Cruz, I'm sorry, Mr. Wilhelmi, did you want to make a comment on this point? Please do.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And appreciate this discussion very much. I think just given the, what was described here by Mr. McElroy and also by the author, the intention is much less bad than we read it. We read this bill the exact same way that Senator Kielash and Senator Tomasoni did. And 213 an hour is unacceptable. But the reason that that law is there is because of bills like this one creating the potential over time for a disparity in the minimum wage versus the for tipped employees versus the actual minimum wage for everyone else. I also want to respond to your question. We want the hospitality industry to be strong, and we want our employers to be successful, but we don't want for that success to come at the expense of the people who work in the bars and restaurants.
So, Senator Cruz, good discussion to date. Any kind of concluding remarks?
Right.
And then,
Chairman.
Senator Metzen.
I thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Cruz, I'm going in for a haircut today. I'm planning on tipping the guy. He's a guy. But I'm very worried about the scissors. Do I have to be concerned?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Metzen, no, I don't believe you have to be concerned. You should still be safe in his hands.
I'm going to send you down there instead.
I'll be more than happy, Senator Metzen. I'll be more than happy. Although I did just get a haircut, so I don't know if I can go much shorter than what I got right here. But I don't have the long flowing locks that you do right now. But
you could use the word handsome if you'd like to. That would be stretching it, I'm sure.
Senator Metzen, you going
touching that one,
Dale? Senator Cruz, appreciate you hanging with us. Any concluding remarks at this point?
No, Mr. Chairman, thank you, and committee members, thank you for this great discussion. If I can leave the committee with one thought, it's how critical our hospitality industry is to the overall economic success of our state. And we haven't paid much attention, in my humble opinion, to the hospitality industry. As a matter of fact, I would argue that in recent years we've done a lot of things that have constricted and made it more difficult for them to operate in our state. And I think that's unfortunate considering such a, an industry that encompasses such a large number of our constituents as far as employing them and such a huge part of our sales tax base here. I think it does deserve some attention. So if I could leave you with one thing, it's that we need to take care of this industry, and I feel that this legislation, I wouldn't be bringing it before you as a server. I wouldn't be bringing it before you if I believed that this was going to harm servers. I know the industry very, very well, and it is in my heart, and it's in the heart of this legislation, and I believe Mr. McElroy and the rest of the advocates for this that our restaurants do succeed. And help to continue to employ such a large portion of our population here in Minnesota.
Thank you, Senator Cruz. So members, we do not have any committee time formally set. We have reserved some space just in case, since we have another deadline week in front of us. We are watching what the other body is doing, and we're listening to, of course, the predictable last-minute requests and suggestions from members and staff. So with that, thank you, Senator Cruz, and members. Committee is adjourned.